Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to your favorite real estate podcast. It's Real Estate Investor MBA. I have the pleasure of being your host. My name is Tejas Gosai. I'd like to start with a big thank you to everyone that makes our show possible. Check out our website, rei.mba. Ton of good stuff I'll talk about in a second. Our guest today, very, very awesome man. His name is John Cohen. He has a world of experience he's going to share, but a little bit about him. He co-founded Toro Real Estate Partners in 2015. And John's understanding of deep value investing in the real estate space started by buying tax deeds and tax liens. Since starting in real estate, he has been involved in over $500 million in various real estate transactions spanning tax liens, rental sale transactions in Manhattan, and his own personal investments. Beast of a man. And one of the reasons I think it's super important to have people like John on the program is we are in turbulent times. Inflation is bananas. Interest rates are going up. The Fed's just about to kick them up another notch. A lot of investors, actually, the news is extremely alarming. And I find that a lot of the people in my circle are investors in my private equity fund, are investors in my commercial real estate team, John's investors, you know, John, who's about to be on the show. This kind of circle of folks that try to stay calm and buy on, but staying calm is what matters and learning from historical data and information to make sure that the moves that we're making are with as much mitigated risk as we can, sticking with as much reward as we can, right? So it's this big, crazy microcosm we're working with, right? What market are you going to be in? What area are you going to invest in? Can you still invest because of interest rates? Can you find the right debt? My short answer is yes, all of it. People are not afraid to buy. They're still buying right now a lot, and they're still investing. There's still a lot of money out there with people who have seen what happened with the stock market that are looking to invest in real estate that don't know how to. And a lot of the folks that listen to this program or, you know, veteran investors, I think it's important to speak up and let people know that things are okay. The world will still be here tomorrow. The sun is still shining. I can promise you that. And I can promise you that you'll find a good deal. A lot of deals are created with spreads, right? You want to buy at the right cap rate, sell at a lower cap rate, create value. We've had plenty of podcasts about that in the past. Great interview. Couple things before we jump into it. Check out our website. It's Real Estate Investor MBA, rei.mba.com. We've had over 70 guests, amazing guests. Scott Lewis, he's Self-Storage King, Spartan Investments, Omar Khan, Boardwalk Wealth, John Rubino does a lot of opportunity zone investing. It was neat to hear about him. He's a Navy veteran. I asked him how piloting has helped him in his career. And it's neat. People's transferable skills really come through in real estate. We have this section called Market Intelligence. My team and I have spent a lot of time and energy to curate articles that make sense for our listeners. Here's one, 6 tips for building generational wealth through real estate. Another one is called Miami'd Out. These New Yorkers have had enough of South Florida. And I really like this one, commercial and multifamily borrowing is up 19%. I think it's important to see things like that, knowing that larger players and different parts of the real estate industry are still moving rapidly, not rapidly, at least they're not stopping. So neat. Information is your sword and shield. That's what we say in the intro. And I truly do believe that. Before I cut to the guest, let me explain one thing. Inventory is always going to be difficult to find, whether it's a good economy, if it's a bad economy, especially when things change. Right? There's so many folks that try to get out of the market, different folks getting into the market, death and inheritance. There are people who are not of the nature to own real estate. And somebody passes away, they get an asset, and then they want to dispose of it. That could be your next asset, and it might be a big win. So again, that's rei.mba. Check it out when you get a chance. We're all over social media. We really love you guys again. And I hope you enjoy the interviews. Cheers. Take care. All right, guys, Real Estate Investor MBA, you know how we do it. Welcome to our show. Today, we have John Cohen with us. He's the co-founder of Toro Real Estate Partners. And John, welcome to the show.
Tejas, thank you for having me. Excited to be here.
You're a big guy. You've done a lot of stuff. I like saying brag about yourself at the beginning of the show. There's some folks that are first-time listeners. I'm trying to inspire them with you to get on the real estate adventure. Tell me about yourself.
Yeah, so I started actually in the financial space. Well, actually, realistically, I played baseball in college and thought I'd be a professional baseball player, which clearly didn't happen. I started in the finance world and quickly realized that it probably wasn't what I wanted to do, although I was relatively decent at it. Well, it was able to give me enough money to at least buy real estate. I realized that I like real estate more. There was no rhyme or reason for it. It just, I felt like there was more control that you had as opposed to being in the finance space, which, you know, buying stocks and stuff like that, it's completely out of your control as an individual. And then while I was doing that, I was buying some properties. I ended up getting my license, started renting apartments, selling apartments in New York City, ended up becoming a
real estate license.
Yeah, real estate license. Got my real estate license, started doing some rentals and sales. 2012.
Okay.
Plus 2012, 13, plus or minus, maybe 2000. Yeah, 2012. We'll go with 2012.
You went through the whole gambit to get your broker's license. That's fun.
Yes. So I got my real estate license, started doing rentals and sales, and then ended up doing multifamily investment sales when I moved over to Marcus & Millichap. And that's when I basically just fell in love with multifamily and then realized I didn't want to be on the brokerage side or on the agent side. I wanted to be on the ownership side. So I went out, bought a 48 unit in 2013.
Out of the gate?
And that was first multifamily property I bought was 48 units, Columbus, Ohio. Sent out a direct mailer. Owner got the mailer, called me, said, I'm putting the property on the market on Monday. I jumped in my car Saturday, drove to Ohio. Saw the property, drove home, called them, said I'll buy it. And that's how I bought my first deal. And
brilliant.
Then from that point on, since then, we've done probably 32 full multifamily properties, probably close to about 4,000 units, $500 million worth of real estate. And it's just been a really fun last 10 years, with some ups and downs, some brain damage, like everything else. But we found a nice little, what we do really well, and we've been really excited about it. And I think the future, we'll see what happens. But that's just a little bit about how I started and where we're at.
Yeah, you got a crazy track record. It's neat for me as a commercial real estate agent, and I have a team to hear about folks that take their license to really crazy levels. But that's a wild road in a short period of time then, because that's, what'd you say, 2012, 2015 is when you started your company?
2015, Toro Real Estate started. The first company I was buying was JC Property Group, actually started in 2000. I think they officially incorporated in 2013. Our multifamily business has been around since 2015.
And that's just so much movement, $500 million in real estate projects. Let's talk about systems and scalability. Like, how did you do that in such a short period of time? Did you go on a hiring rampage?
We're the opposite. I think at max capacity, we had three cold callers sit in our office, a full-time admin and a full-time, asset manager / acquisitions guy. I've never been everyone reads all the books on systems and processes and hiring and stuff like that. But right now, sitting in our office, and the only staff is our admin, my partner, and my partner's son. And we run our whole business. That's it. We don't have, the fancy meetings and stuff like that. Not saying that we should or we shouldn't. There definitely could be more structure. We've been net sellers for the last 2+ years. So
what's that? What's a net seller?
We're selling way more than we're buying. We haven't bought a multifamily property in 2 years. We've bought a lot of dirt. We've bought a lot of other stuff. But from a standpoint of our bread and butter multifamily, we haven't really bought anything. The market's been, up and down all over the place. There's been some really good opportunities. COVID, some really bad opportunities. But all the properties we owned really were doing really well. And basically from middle of COVID to now, we've been selling a lot of assets. And during COVID, we realized that we probably didn't need half the people we had, because what were we really doing, right? If we're not acquiring stuff and we're just changing the business model a little bit. We never really had that, crazy system and process. It's all been myself and my partner sort of just, looking at deals, underwriting deals, touring deals, and then buying them. So I'd like to think that, we are looking at different things going forward and staffing and procedures and stuff like that, but we never really needed it. It sort of worked really well just, doing it the way we did.
It's crazy and amazing. It's big numbers for a few people, but you do have some systems in place. You guys have to have some great automation and things like that, especially being a small group. What about markets? Where are you guys targeted? Where do you work?
Yeah, so we've bought from North Carolina all the way down to Florida, as far west as Alabama, Mississippi, and the Midwest and Ohio. That's been our bread and butter. I would say South Carolina, Florida, and Ohio have been where 90% of our deals were. Early on, we were very opportunistic. You know, we bought stuff that, you know, most people probably didn't want to play in that space. Just really, really messed up stuff. You know, 50% occupied, vacant properties, just stuff that needed really heavy lifting. They've been harder to find over the last couple of years because the market's been so picked over. So it's been harder to find those opportunities. And simultaneous, we're not as willing to go into tertiary market or, you know, a little bit further away or a little bit harder to get to. So we've been a little bit more strict on location. And in those areas, the better markets, you know, we have a ton of properties in Jacksonville, Florida, Columbus, Ohio. Finding those opportunities have been a little bit harder. So now we're looking for something a little bit different. Right now, we're buying a lot of land. We do have a big development project coming up in Charleston. And on the multifamily side, we're looking for, you know, better located, better properties that are, you know, a little bit more cash flow focused as opposed to major upside.
What about unit count?
Yeah, no, good question. I would say when we first started, we tried to stay, you know, there was no vintage. It didn't really matter, right? If it was broken, we wanted to buy it and we wanted to fix it. Now I would say, you know, 200 units plus, you know, 150 units plus is probably the minimum, unless it's in a market we're really familiar with. We have management and then we can add to whatever we have in that area. You know, then we could go down a little bit more as long as we can operate the property either in the current footprint that we have or it can support management, then we can do it. But for the most part, you know, 150 units plus is probably the space that we'll fit in pretty well.
How do you, I mean, you must have relationships, obviously, with banks and different types of debt. How do you float something like that right now with the craziness?
Yeah. So we actually, I just got off a mastermind that I'm on with, you know, six or seven of guys in the business that we talk every single month. And the debt market's been crazy, right? It's been crazy for a long time. And right now, you know, we're not looking for bridge debt. It's just really expensive. It's really risky. There's a lot that comes with it that is going to be very costly, like rate caps and, you know, expirations and having to hit minimum requirements on extensions and stuff like that. But then the agencies are, their LTVs are super low. They're just not getting to the pricing for deals to transact. So one of the reasons why we haven't bought is that the debt market's a little all over the place. And it makes it a lot harder when you're going to buy a deal when your debt is so not pinned down, right? You don't know how much money you're going to need when you come to the table. But if we were to buy a deal, you know, we would probably look for either, you know, local bank financing where you have a little bit more flexibility and or some type of agency product that will allow you to have really good debt with none of those, you know, crazy hurdles or crazy risks or short-term expirations, because you don't want to be stuck, you know, when your loan's coming up if interest rates are really high and the market's changed a little bit. So we would be very, very focused, even buying a deal all cash today. There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, you could take the biggest risk off the table if you don't have a lender. So that's something that's we're a lot closer to doing than, you know, going out buying an 80% LTV with a crazy bridge loan.
That sounds amazing. You've mentioned masterminds. It's always important to keep a good crowd around. How much has that helped you since you started in this, switched over?
Yeah, no, it's been good. I think, you know, at the end of the day, real estate is a, you know, a who you know type business, not just from finding a deal or finding an acquisition or talking to a broker, but it's also when something goes wrong, you know, who do you know that can help you fix a situation? So those situations and then those people that you surround yourself with, that is what will make you significantly more successful. Doesn't mean you can't do it without them, because you got to start somewhere. But the more people you can put in your contacts that can help you in a situation will drastically impact, you know, the success of deals if something's going a little sideways.
Yeah, prepare for war. Hopefully you won't have it.
Exactly.
What about, yeah, you mentioned market units, financing, fundraising. Do you work with, you know, what kind of individuals do you work with? How do you work with them?
Yes. So we have full gamut. You know, we've worked with the institutions, you know, a huge fund that we've worked with in the past on a very heavy lifting deal, all the way down to, you know, when you first started, you know, beg, borrow, and steal, right? It's your friend, your cousin, your aunt, you know, everybody in that you could possibly think of. You know, something I exercise, I tell everybody is if you take your cell phone and you go A to Z, create a spreadsheet and just put the name and what you think a dollar amount would be. And, it, you know, it could be an ex-girlfriend, a teacher, you know, an old boss, and it could be 5,000, 1,000. 100 million. And the next step is then to start making some calls and setting up meetings. And that can't be, hey, I got a deal, I need money. It won't work. You know, but you need the money and you haven't set it up properly, you're going to give up basically everything that you have. You know, whatever the juice is, it's going to be taken away from you. But the right way to go about it is, you know, starting that process of, hey, this is what I've been doing. I started doing real estate. You got to tell a story and you got to get people warm. But if you go through that list, you know, you'll find some people, and then it's just in the space networking and seeing what comes next. But you know, we have the full gamut. Our, you know, our best investors are probably high net worth individuals that are, you know, looking for a modest return. It's another form of income from them. You're basically going to provide them with something that they may or may not have access to. They seem to be the best source of capital that, you know, I would recommend anyone trying to do this, is that that's the space you want to play in. You know, friends and family a little bit tougher because there's a relationship. The institutions, the family offices, the private money, they're going to be, you know, expensive or controlling, and they're going to take a lot of the juice away from you. You get, you know, a couple of high net worth individuals that, you know, trust you, know you, you're typically going to have a much better relationship in a deal.
And you got to kind of sell your, you got to sell your wares. Like, I'm good at this. Here's why. Here's my team. When you mention high net worth individuals, like accredited investors.
Yeah. Any of those high net worth people will be accredited. You know, our deals, we have deals that are just for accredited. And we have deals that aren't, that you don't have to be accredited. It just depends on the size of the deal, what we're doing, total dollars needed and stuff like that. But in a perfect world, if, you know, the recommendation, you know, find accredited high net worth guys and stick in that space. If you don't know anybody that checks off that box, you know, maybe you align yourself with someone that does. But that is definitely the easiest path when you're raising money.
In the podcasting world, everyone knows Whitney Sewell, the syndication show. That guy, it's great. He was on our podcast. He's like, I didn't have a deal for the first however many episodes he did. How about asset management? You got a lot of tenants to look after. You farm it out?
No, we do it ourselves. Everything we have third party management, but we do everything internally. So the, you know, we get our financials, you know, we have weekly calls with our management company. We have a, you know, a thing that we like to run through just basically from a standpoint of occupancy issues, cash management, you know, the whole nine yards. And we're looking at that monthly. You know, we do work with one management company now, so it makes it a lot easier. When we first started, we might have had, you know, a deal in Ohio, a deal in South Carolina, a deal in Alabama, all different management companies. It makes it a little bit more challenging because you have a different, you know, cadence with each group. But, you know, we tour our properties, you know, when we're active and buying a lot more, you know, we're touring our properties every, you know, every month, every couple months, just depending on how much work's going on. But, you know, we speak to our management companies on a weekly basis. We get a set of reports that we'd like to see so we could, you know, evaluate not only, you know, the current state, you know, the historical and the potential future.
I'm assuming you do a lot of that to keep your investors informed.
For sure. You know, quarterly reporting for our investors on all our deals, you know, making sure they get their quarterly reports so they could see what's going on with the narrative and they understand it. But yes, it, you know, if you just buy a deal and forget about it, you know, a lot more can go wrong. So not only do we do that for our investors, but we also do it just so we make sure that we're pushing, you know, we're pushing the property as much as we can.
Yeah. You have a lot of folks to keep in touch with. Your investors are all over the country, specific pockets.
I haven't really put it on a map, but I know we, you know, we have some investors out in California. We have investors throughout the East Coast. I would say a large portion of them is probably in New York because that's where we are. Our office is here, but they're all over. You know, we've had people from basically you name it. They, you know, they've come and invested with us.
It's great. What do you have in the future though? Like, are you going to look at any other territories? What's your plans for next year? I mean, you're obviously good at growing, and I think the smartest people can make a spread out of something, but you got a good gambit.
Yeah. Our, you know, we're always looking for, you know, new opportunities. You know, we are opportunistic and, you know, I don't think that's going to change. I think the current market condition may make it a little bit harder, maybe more challenging, but at the end of the day, you know, we want to focus on deals that we believe in. You know, we invest in all our deals. So if we're not going to buy it ourselves, we're not going to buy it, right? We would buy a deal first and then raise money before we would just, you know, force a deal, square peg in a round hole. The biggest deal we have on our plate, we have two developments really, building 450 units down in Charleston, in the Charleston MSA, wow. South Carolina.
Congratulations.
I appreciate that. And we have a land assemblage and entitlement up by us in Peekskill, New York, that is coming together pretty nicely. But those are probably the two things and the foremost. Other than that, you know, we've probably bought over the last 2 years, probably close to 2,500 acres worth of real estate, if not a little bit more. You know, that's just buy, sell, buy, subdivide, you know, buy, improve a little bit, and then sell, or, you know, buy, subdivide it, and sell or finance it. That's really where, you know, what we've done most recently. We're still looking for multifamily, but it's just been a little bit harder.
Yeah, a little bit harder. All right. So how about, we got a few more minutes. Motivation stuff. You seem like an intense dude in a very polite way.
No, I appreciate that. It's a very good compliment. I tell people all the time, you know, I'm not in the friend business. You know, you're going to love me or hate me. It's fine. But I think the biggest motivating factor is probably, it's probably family. Just, you know, I grew up and my parents were the best. They gave me everything I possibly could have wanted and more. And I'd like to return that to them, as well as, you know, my two daughters now and my wife and stuff like that. So I think that's what, you know, gets you going.
How old are your kids?
2.5 months, 3 months, and 3.5 years old. So brand new.
Congratulations, man. That's the best. My boys are 7 and 9, like competitive soccer, crazy life. But I do think kids make you work a lot harder in real estate.
No doubt. It was funny when my first daughter was born, people said, you know, how, you know, what's going to change? I'm like, I'm either, you know, who knows? But it's just that, it's that added, you know, that added fuel to, you know, go make something happen or want more or do better.
Or cut out the nonsense.
Exactly, right? You, the little things fall apart and you focus on things that matter.
I have this whole theory. I'm like, you shave off a couple friends every year when you start having kids. It's just natural.
That's for sure. It's just, you know, it's like, man, no more of that guy, or it's not going to work anymore, right? And there's just a little bit more that you got to focus on.
That's the hustle too. I love happily married real estate men that just live to, you know, for generational wealth. You're helping people do that. You know, that's a big part of this. We're housing, I don't know, you are housing tens of thousands of people, or have over all these years. You're a good landlord. How about that? We got a couple minutes. So what do you tell someone? Because my biggest like guy that I'm trying to talk to, or girl actually, is somebody who's not buying their first multifamily or not buying their first property or single family. What do you tell those guys?
I would say you gotta have a reason for what you're doing. And whether it's your 100th deal or your first one, if you want to do it, you're not just going to wake up and it's going to be there, right? So you got to take action. You got to do something. You know, joking around, you can find a market where you can buy a $50,000 house. And I'm not saying to do this, but go buy it, lose the 50 grand. You're going to learn a lot more than just reading books and thinking and pretending. And next thing you know, 6 years later, you've never done anything. So you got to do it. At some point, you have to do it. And if you don't, you'll kick yourself in the ass later, but just go out and do it, whether it's an investment, a passive investment, or just going to buy something and figuring it out. There's nothing wrong with that. Whether, like I said, your 100th transaction, they never go according to plan, right? You know, the day of closing is mayhem, even on your 50th transaction. It's not just a smooth, seamless process, no matter how many times you've done it or you've never done. It's probably actually smoother when you've never done it because you don't know what to expect. But, you know, we have the same argument, you know, in the office, the same, not arguments, the conversations like, oh, they're going to miss the wire cutoff. Someone's got to run to the bank. Oh, you missed the signed document. So, but you just got to get up.
I need a wet signature.
Exactly. It's all of that stuff, you know, whether it's your first or your millionth, it's just, you know, it's, you gotta take that first step.
Love it, man. You're a very smart guy. Last question. How does baseball help you today?
It's a competitive nature where you want to be the best at what you're doing. And even when I played baseball, it's the same theory, you know, that team sport, someone's got, you know, you need 9 guys. You can't do it yourself. Like I said, you can do real estate yourself. It's a lot easier when you have people in the right positions. So I think that, you know, you take that and you look at it. It's okay. I did it relatively well. How can I do that, you know, better? And it's the competitive side of it and setting up those pieces. So, you know, everyone's going in the right direction.
It's awesome. Yeah. Everyone listening, compete and, talk to John if he makes himself available. Toro Real Estate Partners. John, how does somebody get a hold of you or invest in you?
Yeah, best way to go. Our website is Toro, TORREP.com. If you go there, there's a little link where you can sign up for an investor questionnaire. You know, I'll shoot you a link or you could set up a call. Or the best way is just shoot me an email. It's John, J-O-H-N at TORREP.com. There's nobody that's too busy with advance notice. If, you know, if anyone listening has any questions, feel free to reach out. Investor, learning to invest, new investor, whatever it is, if you want another set of eyes on something, if you shoot me an email, typically get back to you, you know, 24, 48 hours with set up a 20, 30, 40 minute call. I mean, everyone has the time as long as you schedule it properly.
Awesome. And you can put your kids to bed every now and then.
Exactly.
Super successful. Love your style. Thanks for being here. Good luck. Cheers.
No, I appreciate it. Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure. And you know, any way I could help, don't ever hesitate to reach out to anybody.
Awesome. Check out the show notes. Everything about John's in there. Thanks again. Real Estate Investor MBA. Cheers.